Some time before morning, I woke again to find that my brightness had become literal. My skin gave off a faint phosphorescence against the darkness, and I tried to hide my hands in my sleeves, draw my collar up high, so I would be less visible, then drifted off again. Part of me just wanted to sleep forever, through the rest of anything that might occur. But I did remember one thing now. Where I had seen the molted mask before, the psychologist from the 11th Expedition, a man I had seen interviewed after his return across the border, a man who had said, in a calm and even tone, "It was quite beautiful, quite peaceful in Area X. We saw nothing unusual, nothing at all." And then had smiled in a vague way. Death, as I was beginning to understand it, was not the same thing here as back across the border. The next morning, my head was still full of the moans of the creature as I re-entered the part of Area X where the trail rose to a steep incline, and on either side of the swampy black water was littered with the deceptively dead-seeming cypress knees. The water stole all sound, and its unmoving surface reflected back only gray moss and tree limbs. I loved this part of the trail as I loved no other. Here the world had a watchfulness matched only by a sense of peaceful solitude. The stillness was simultaneously an invitation to let down your guard and a rebuke against letting down your guard. Base camp was a mile away, and I was lazy with the light and the hum of insects in the tall grass. I was already rehearsing what I would say to the surveyor, what I would tell her, and what I would withhold. The brightness within me flared up. I had time to take a half step to the right. The first shot took me in the left shoulder instead of the heart, and the impact twisted me as it pushed me back. The second shot ripped through my left side, not so much lifting me off my feet as making me spin and trip myself into the profound silence. As I hit the incline and jounced down the hill, there came a roaring in my ears. I lay at the bottom of the hill, breath knocked out of me, one outstretched hand plunged into the black water and the other arm trapped beneath me. The pain in my left side seemed at first as if someone kept opening me up with a butcher knife and sewing me back together, but it quickly subsided to a kind of roiling ache, the bullet wounds reduced, through some cellular conspiracy, to a sensation like the slow squirming inside me of tiny animals. Only seconds had passed. I knew I had to move. Luckily, my gun had been holstered, or it would have gone flying. I took it out now. I had seen the scope, a tiny circle in the tall grass, recognized who had set the ambush. The surveyor was ex-military and good, but she couldn't know that the brightness had protected me, that shock wasn't overtaking me, that the wound hadn't transfixed me with paralyzing pain. I rolled onto my belly, intending to crawl along the water's edge. Then I heard the surveyor's voice calling out to me from the other side of the embankment. "Where is the psychologist? What did you do with her?" I made the mistake of telling the truth. "She's dead," I called back, trying to make my voice sound shaky and weak. The surveyor's only reply was to fire a round over my head, perhaps hoping I would break cover. "I didn't kill the psychologist," I shouted. "She jumped from the top of the lighthouse."
"Risk for reward,"
the surveyor responded, throwing it back at me like a grenade. She must have thought about that moment the whole time I'd been gone. It had no more effect on me than had my attempt to use it on her. "Listen to me. You've hurt me, badly. You can leave me out here. I'm not your enemy." Pathetic words, placating words. I waited, but the surveyor didn't reply. There was just the buzzing of the bees around the wildflowers, a gurgling of water somewhere in the black swamp beyond the embankment. I looked up at the stunning blue of the sky and wondered if it was time to start moving. "Go back to base camp. Take the supplies," I shouted, trying again. "Return to the border. I don't care. I won't stop you." I don't believe you about any of it, she shouted, the voice a little closer, advancing along the other side. Then, you've come back and you're not human anymore. You should kill yourself so I don't have to. I didn't like her casual tone. I'm as human as you, I replied. This is a natural thing. And realized she wouldn't understand that I was referring to the brightness. I wanted to say that I was a natural thing, too, but I didn't know the truth of that, and none of this was helping plead my case anyway. Tell me your name, she screamed. Tell me your name. Tell me your goddamn fucking name. That won't make any difference, I shouted back. How would that make any difference? I don't understand why that makes a difference. Silence was my answer. She would speak no more. I was a demon, a devil, something she couldn't understand or had chosen not to. I could feel her coming ever closer, crouching for cover. She wouldn't fire again until she had a clear shot, whereas I had the urge to just charge her, firing wildly. Instead, I half-crawled, half-crept toward her, fast along the water's edge. She might expect me to get away by putting distance between us, but I knew with the range of her rifle that was suicidal. I tried to slow my breathing. I wanted to be able to hear any sound she might make, giving away her position. After a moment, I heard footsteps opposite me on the other side of the hill. I found a clump of muddy earth, and I lobbed it low and long down the edge of the black water, back the way I had come. As it was landing about 50 feet from me with a gluttonous plop, I was edging my way up the hillside so I could just barely see the edge of the trail. The top of the surveyor's head rose up, not 10 feet ahead of me. She had dropped down to crawl through the long grass of the path. It was just a momentary glimpse. She was in plain view for less than a second, and then would be gone. I didn't hesitate. I shot her. Her head jolted to the side, and she slumped soundlessly into the grass and turned over on her back with a groan, as if she had been disturbed in her sleep, and then lay still. The side of her face was covered with blood, and her forehead looked grotesquely misshapen. I slid back down the incline. I was staring at my gun, shocked. I felt as if I were stuck between two futures, even though I had already made the decision to live in one of them. Now, it was just me. When I checked again, cautious and low against the side of the hill, I saw her still sprawled there, unmoving. I had never killed anyone before. I was not sure, given the logic of this place, that I had truly killed someone now. At least, this was what I told myself to control my shakes. Because behind it all, I kept thinking that I could have tried to reason with her a little longer, or not taken the shot, and escaped into the wilderness. I got up and made my way up the hill, feeling sore all over, although my shoulder remained just a dull ache. Standing over the body, her rifle lying straight above her bloody head, like an exclamation mark, I wondered what her last hours had been like at base camp, what doubts had racked her. If she had started back to the border, hesitated, returned to the camp, set out again, caught in a circle of indecision. Surely some trigger had driven her to confront me, or perhaps living alone in her own head overnight in this place had been enough. Solitude could press down on a person, seemed to demand that action be taken. If I had come back when I'd promised, might it all have been different? I couldn't leave her there. But I hesitated about taking her back to base camp and burying her in the old graveyard behind the tents. The brightness within me made me unsure. What if there was a purpose for her in this place? Would burying her circumvent an ability to change that might belong to her, even now? Finally, I rolled her over and over, the skin still elastic and warm, blood spooling out of the wound in her head, until she reached the water's edge. Then I said a few words about how I hoped she would forgive me and how I forgave her for shooting at me. I don't know if my words made much sense to either of us at that point. It all sounded absurd to me as I said it. If she had suddenly been resurrected, we would probably both admit we forgave nothing. Carrying her in my arms, I waded into the black water. I let her go when I was knee-deep and watched her sink. When I could no longer see even the outstretched pale anemone of her left hand, I waded back to shore. I did not know if she was religious, expected to be resurrected in heaven, or become food for the worms, but regardless, the cypress trees formed a kind of cathedral over her as she went deeper and deeper. I had no time to absorb what had just happened, however. Soon after I stood once again on the trail, the brightness usurped many more places than just my nerve centers. I crumpled to the ground, cocooned in what felt like an encroaching winter of dark ice, the brightness spreading into the corona of brilliant blue light with a white core. It felt like cigarette burns as a kind of searing snow drifted down and infiltrated my skin. Soon I became so frozen, so utterly numb, trapped there on the trail in my own body, that my eyes became fixed on the thick blades of grass in front of me, my mouth half open in the dirt. There should have been an awareness of comfort at being spared the pain of my wounds, but I was being haunted in my delirium. I can remember only three moments from these hauntings. In the first, the surveyor, psychologist, and anthropologist peered down at me through ripples as if I were a tadpole staring up through a pool of water. They kept staring for an abnormally long time. In the second, I sat beside the moaning creature, my hand upon its head, as I murmured something in a language I did not understand. In the third, I stared at a living map of the border, which had been depicted as if it were a great circular moat surrounding Area X. In that moat, vast sea creatures swam, oblivious to me watching them. I could feel the absence of their regard like a kind of terrible bereavement. All that time, I discovered later from thrash marks in the grass, I wasn't frozen at all. I was spasming and twitching in the dirt like a worm, some distant part of me still experiencing the agony, trying to die because of it, even though the brightness wouldn't let it happen. If I could have reached my gun, I think I would have shot myself in the head and been glad of it. It may be clear by now that I am not always good at telling people things they feel they have a right to know, and in this account thus far, I have neglected to mention some details about the brightness. My reason for this is, again, the hope that any reader's initial opinion in judging my objectivity might not be influenced by these details. I have tried to compensate by revealing more personal information than I would otherwise, in part because of its relevance to the nature of Area X. The truth is that in the moments before the surveyor tried to kill me, the brightness expanded within me to enhance my senses, and I could feel the shifting of the surveyor's hips as she lay against the ground and zeroed in on me through the scope. I could hear the sound of the beads of sweat as they trickled down her forehead. I could smell the deodorant she wore, and I could taste the yellowing grass she had flattened to set her ambush. When I shot her, it was with these enhanced senses still at work, and that was the only reason she was vulnerable to me. This was, in extremis, a sudden exaggeration of what I had been experiencing already. On the way to the lighthouse and back, the brightness had manifested in part as a low-grade cold. I had run a mild fever, had coughed, and had sinus difficulties. I had felt faint at times and lightheaded. A floating sensation and a heaviness had run through my body at intervals, never with any balance, so that I was either buoyant or dragging. My husband would have been proactive about the brightness. He would have found a thousand ways to try to cure it and to take away the scars, too, and not let me deal with it on my own terms, which is why during our time together I sometimes didn't tell him when I was sick.